This is if clauses number 8 and John number 4. However, before we get there, I have to straighten out a nationwide heresy or misinterpretation or broad definition, which went out to 15 million people on Glenn Beck's afternoon program. Mm-hmm. Dolores and I sat there and watched it, and he had a rabbi in to explain Genesis 11. So let's turn to Genesis 11. It was very interesting what he gave. Did talk about Nimrod, but didn't bring it up to today and what's going to happen. But let's read it, and I'll tell you what he said, because he's liking it to a civilization, and also giving a different interpretation for bricks and mortar versus stone. So I'll see if I can remember it here. And the whole earth was of one language and one speech, because that's what they spoke before the flood. And it came to pass, as they were migrating toward the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they settled there. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had bricks for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. So the interpretation was this. Since Nimrod was a dictator, that's correct. But he was setting up a substitute civilization rather than giving people independence as likened to stones which God created. He likened the people to bricks where they're all the same, like in a socialist society. And then he said the mortar was likened to materialism, and that you kept all the bricks in order and alignment and control because you gave them a certain amount of materialism. And that took away the freedom that God had given them. Well, the start was just fine. The conclusion concerning the freedom that God has given was just fine. But Glenn Beck interjected and said, well, God wasn't angry at them when he scattered them. That was for their good. So that's what we see today. That, you know, the government's oppressing us, so we need to get a form where we can be released from it by being individuals. And part of that is turning to God. So I thought about that quite a bit, and I thought, well, why don't you just read it for what it says? So let's come over here to chapter 10, and let's see about Nimrod. Didn't read these verses, but just alluded to them. And he talked about hunters. Okay. And Glenn Beck said, well, everyone hunted then. Well, not necessarily. But his kind of hunting was said he hunted people. Well, he was a mighty hunter to hunt the wild animals to gather the people together in the cities so that he could control them in the cities. So when you get half of the story and half of the facts, then you're not going to come up with the correct conclusion. So if you really want to know the truth about Nimrod and his wife Semiramis, which he didn't mention much, and his son Tammuz, which he didn't mention, I think, but maybe once. No, not at all. Okay. You get the book, The Two Babylons, by Alexander Hislop. We have it on our website. You can download it, and you can read it. And I'll tell you this. More than 50 years ago, that was the first book that I read, because in the magazine that was published called The Plain Truth, they had a series, Satan's Great Deception. And it was going back explaining about Nimrod, Semiramis, and Tammuz, and how those three represent the gods of all the religions, because when the languages were confounded, everybody called them by the new language that they had. So he didn't bring that out. So let's pick it up here in verse 7, chapter 10. The sons of Cush, Seba, Havilah, Sabata, Rama, and Sabteca, and the sons of Rama, Sheba, and Dedan. Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one in the earth. Didn't bring that out, how forceful and how strong that he was. He was a mighty hunter against the Lord, or as we have in the margin, in place of the Lord. So he was setting himself up as the representative of God. And they were worshiping him as the sun. The sun represented him. So when they worship the sun, they're worshiping Nimrod. Okay? The moon then was his wife, and I forget which one was for Temes. Mighty hunter against the Lord, therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter against the Lord or in place of the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, Calne, in the land of Shinar. And then he went forth from there to Assyria and built Nineveh and the city of Rehoboth, Ir, and Calah, and reasoned between Nineveh and Calah, which is a great city. So it shows they settled all what is called today Iraq. And then they had the great plans. So chapter 11 brings out how they were carrying out these plans in building a tower. And I think it was very interesting that they showed, which was deliberate too, by the way, with the builders of the parliament building of the European Union. They built it just like a picture of the destroyed Tower of Babel. And so even IBM, they showed a picture like that one time, and IBM said, what they started, we will finish. So what was it that they started? Why did this incident come about, and why did God do what he was going to do? Or what he actually did, rather. Let's come down here to chapter 11 and verse 4, and let's see what they did. And they said, come, let us build us a city and a tower. And I think it's very interesting that not too far from ancient Babylon in Dubai, they have the tallest building in the world, 2,500 feet. Mm-hmm. And they say it's real exciting being a window washer for that building. I guess it would be. With its top reaching into the heavens. Now, some have read this also to imply that they had the technology to go to outer space. In a book called Lost Races by, Nuremberg, maybe that's not his name, I don't recall. But anyway, the history of lost races. He showed they had jet planes, they had atomic bombs, carry over from the flood. Because you can find certain places like in the Gobi Desert that it had to be an atomic bomb to do it because the sand was fused into glass. Large areas of it. René Nuremberg, that's what. And let us establish a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered upon the face of the whole earth. So what actually took place was, God was going to send them to their inheritances in the earth because God planned where they would go. And so this was actually a rebellion. We're not going to go. We're going to stay here. We're going to build a city. we're going to reach into heavens, and Nimrod is our God. He's our hero. Verse 5, so the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men had built. See, God lets the wicked prosper for a time to see what they're going to do, see how they do it. Okay. And the Lord said, behold, the people are one, and they all have one language. Now here is the key. This is the key that was missed by the rabbi and by Glenn Beck right here. Why did he confuse the languages? Rest of verse 6, right in the middle. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. Now nothing which they have imagined to do will be restrained from them. So that tells you they had an understanding of technology which came through the flood. And they could repeat this very quickly. And stop and think. How soon would the end have come if that would have happened? Well, about like what we're dealing with. Because the world was the same until when? Beginning of 1800, our time? And that's when they had the steam engine invention, 1804. Okay? And after that, and look what we have now. We've sent men to the moon. We have rovers up on Mars. You know, I think all the greeny weenies ought to have a riot because they're polluting that place up there with those two with those two rovers. Now they're talking about going into space, going to Mars. Now, nothing which they have imagined to do will be restrained from them. So God had to intervene and stop them from developing and advancing, and he scattered them. So it was punishment, and it was that God was angry with them. It wasn't that he did this as a blessing so they could go out and be independent and live in their countries. No, they were supposed to go there anyway. So the moral of the story, if you ask a rabbi, what is it that this means? Listen carefully, because the allegorical interpretation may make sense, but that may not be the truth of what it's saying. It may have parts of it which work in there. Okay, let's see what he did. Verse 7, come, let us go down. And there confound their language so they cannot understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from that place upon the face of all the earth, and they quit building the city. Therefore the name of it is called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of all the earth there. And from there the Lord scattered them abroad upon the face of all the earth. So they were scattered, not as a blessing, but as they were to go to their inheritance anyway, but now they had a curse upon them, which then is, no one could understand one another. So you couldn't build some intricate building unless you had good communication, what's going on and how to do it. So that became a symbol of Nimrod's empire. And another thing that was not brought out in the program, which would be interesting if he would, what is the modern day Nimrod going to do? Because it's going to happen. It's prophesied there will be a world government. And Glenn Beck is doing all he can to keep there being a world government. But the only problem is he doesn't realize it's prophesied in the Bible. Let's go to Revelation and let's see. And let's see, at the end, it's going to be repeated in a grandiose way. And it's going to be something. Revelation 13, we've gone over this before. So if they're going to finish the Tower of Babel and dominate the people, what it really is showing, When they finish it, they are going to bring man's civilization to the highest degree of technology and education and intelligence and power and all of these things together, and they will be able to do it with one language through computers. And today, you don't even need interpreters anymore. Just speak into a computer and it'll, which language would you like this in? Chinese, Russian, whatever that would be, German, Yavol, you know, Spanish. And it'll translate it right there, fairly decent translation. So we will be of one language by the time we get around to it. And there's a lot that has to be done. And that's why next week I'm going to bring the sermon more about what China is doing and how that's going to fit in with Afghanistan. All right, chapter 13. Here's the beast, 7 heads, 10 horns. Now, just like the civilization did back there, with the exception of Noah and Shem, they all worshipped Nimrod as God. And that was one of the requirements so that you could get the benefits of his protection and live in his cities. And where did he get his power? All right, let's just pick it up here in verse 2. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Now, a lot of these things you're going to find right there in Daniel, the 7th chapter. Daniel 7 gives the first half of it. Revelation 13 gives the last half of it. Like a leopard, his feet like the feet of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion, and the dragon, who over here in chapter 12 and verse 9, that old serpent, a great dragon, was cast out, the ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan. So this identifies who it is. The dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. Who do you think was against God? Just Nimrod is a man? No. Who do you think was in place of God? Just Nimrod? No. Nimrod was the one that they saw. It was Satan, the devil behind him, the power behind him. And also, if you watch the History Channel or look at what they present, every once in a while they will have the occult and the Third Reich, and showing all the technology that they had from the occult, which means they got it from Satan, the devil. So here is a repeat of it, right here in the end time. Okay? And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. What did Satan, the devil, tell Jesus when he was tempting him? He said, if you bow down and worship me, I'll give you all these nations right now. Because it's given to me, and I give it to whomsoever I will. See, and it was given to Satan because men rejected God. And when men reject God, they're turned over to the god of this world, Satan the devil. So here we have it now repeated on a worldwide basis. And this is why, and we will see, that they are going to have a world government, and we are going to see that the only way they're going to get it in is with a world monetary system. Because as soon as they get a nation all set up and ready to go, just like this one, even the magazines were congratulating each other, oh, we're socialists now. Okay. Then the election of 2010 came, and all the work that had been done was almost all undone in one election. Now, how far they'll go, see? So there are not enough, how should we say, loyal elitists in every nation to take over nations and subvert them so they can bring them into a one-world government. So what they're going to have to do is bring in a world currency, and that will come with a worldwide economic collapse. Then everybody starts out the same. One currency. Okay, so I'm getting ahead of myself here, but that's how I see it's going to happen, and many experts say the same thing, and I've preached that for a long, long time. All right, let's go on. And I saw one of his heads as if it were slain to death, but his deadly wound was healed. Resurrection. Now, I don't know what happened. Deadly wound was slain. I have speculated with that, that perhaps that may take place when he stops the sacrifices at the coming temple in Jerusalem, and the Jews send out a hit squad to get him. And his deadly wound is healed. And the whole earth was amazed and followed the beast. So now here we have for the first time a complete worldwide deception. And they worship the dragon, and I've got another article at home. The Muslims are calling all people to get together for a day of world prayer for peace. I was amazed. They worship the dragon who gave his authority to the beast, and they worship the beast saying, who is like the beast, who has the power to make war against him. That's why Nimrod was a mighty hunter in place of the Lord or against the Lord. No one could make war against him because he got all the best men. He had all the weapons. He had all the power. People were worshiping him as God. Now, at the end time, we have the same thing on a grander scale. And a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies was given to him, and authority was given to him to continue for 42 months after the deadly wound was healed. Now notice, just like Nimrod, only here, the whole world's going to be subject to it. Well, when you look at it, going back to the Tower of Babel, the majority of the world, what eventually became the world, was represented back there at the Tower of Babel. It's possible that this is talking about a system, but as we will see, it comes down to a single person when we get to 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. Okay? Because there's only one chapter in the New Testament that interprets this, and yet it was written some 35 years before Revelation 13. So that's how God puts things together, a little here, a little there. Verse 7, and he was given power to make war against the saints. Okay, so this is a political system, but there is one leader. So it's both. Okay? And to overcome them, and he was given authority over every tribe and nation, language and nation, and all, as I emphasized last time, who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. Pay attention to what God says. Then it talks about the mark of the beast. All right. Now, let's come here to 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. And let's read the description of what this is. And this is exactly the same system, you see, because Nimrod's system was what? A mystery system, right? And a mystery system of lawlessness against God. Now we're given this warning here. So let's see how we're doing on this. Now we beseech you, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, that you not be quickly shaken in mind, nor be troubled, neither by spirit, because there'd be a lot of demons going around and say, you know, hear this, hear that, hear the other thing, nor by word, a message or a book, nor by epistle. Now notice this. As if from us, showing that there were some going around writing false epistles of Paul, saying that the day of Christ is present. Now, that's an interesting way to phrase it, see, because that's exactly what the New Agers are looking for. The Christ, their Christ, and his presence in the world. Do not let anyone deceive you by any means, because that day will not come unless the apostasy, and that is total rejection of God, shall come first. Now hold your place here. Come back to Psalm 2. come back to Psalm 2, because this shows that it is a whole worldwide thing that is taking place. And there are a lot of people think, well, if we do this or if we do that or if we vote here or vote there, we'll stop the world government from coming in. No, you won't. The only way you would be able to stop them that if in one night and one day, because half the world is night and half the world is day, if you could eliminate all of those in the international elite circle and extinguish their lives at the same time. Unless you could do that, doesn't make any difference, because there's another one to stand up and replace it. If one goes, another one comes in. Psalm 2, verse 1. Why do the nations rage and the people plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his Christ, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cut their cords from us. Isn't that interesting? This whole movement rejects God, believes in atheism. When you believe in atheism, you know you're lacking power. So when Satan comes along and gives you power, you think, oh, this is great. See, and that's exactly what's going to happen. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he shall speak to them in his wrath and in his fury. He terrifies them. That's what's going to happen when the events as depicted in Revelation take place. Yea, I have set my king upon Zion, my holy mountain. That is the return of Christ. So that shows these events, verses 1 through 4, are those things which take place before the return of Christ. Now let's see how that ties in with 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, and the fate that is going to happen to the one who is mentioned here. The apostasy shall come first, total turning away from God. And the man of sin shall be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is an object of worship, so that he comes into the temple of God and sits down as God, proclaiming that he himself is God. Now that's greater than what Nimrod did. Nimrod said, worship me, for I represent God. This one's going to say, I am God, worship me, because I am God. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? And now you understand what is holding him back in order for him to be revealed in his own set time. It's going to happen at the time that God has decreed. We're not going to rush it. We're not going to speed it up. We're not going to slow it down. And I always get a kick out of it. People say, prophecy's speeding up. No, it's just right on time. Oh, prophecy's slowing down. Looks like there's more time. No, it's right on time. Just like we're going to find out when we examine more how the whole Asian area has to develop in order to support the army of 200 million. And it's on its way. All right, that's a little teaser for next week. Verse 7, the mystery of lawlessness. Now the King James says iniquity, but you missed the point with iniquity. Lawlessness means you replace all of God's laws. That's the ultimate of lawlessness. You replace all of God's laws with human and satanic laws. The mystery of lawlessness is already working. Satan was trying to get into the church. Listen, Satan has the whole world deceived, right? Who's he interested in getting now? Anyone who has the Spirit of God by any means that he can do it. See? That's why the church being scattered is a good thing, because we all have to stand on our own two feet. And all the ministers better teach all the brethren to stand on their own two feet. It's not going to be like we thought years ago. You know, when Dolores and I first got married, we looked at each other and said, my, it's nice we're not going to get old. But, you know, we look in the mirror today and, ooh, what happened? Okay? All right? The mystery of lawlessness is already working because Satan is behind the mystery of lawlessness. Only there is one who is restraining at the present time until it arises out of the midst of what? The mystery or system of lawlessness. Who is the one restraining it? Who is in charge of prophecy? Christ, under God the Father. So it's not going to come until it's ready. And when it does, poor old Glenn Beck's going to be disappointed. He couldn't stop it. Okay? Now notice, then the lawless one will be revealed. The world will know. Now notice how this ties in with Psalm 2. Whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and will destroy with the brightness of his coming. Now there's only one place in the Bible which shows the time setting that this will take place. All right? Come back here to Revelation 19. Revelation 19, verse 19. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth, all of them together, and their armies, gathered together to make war with him who sits on the horse and with his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet who worked miracles in his presence, by which he had deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. Those two were cast alive into the lake of fire which burns with brimstone. Sharp two-edged sword goes out of the mouth of Christ, and the flesh falls off all the troops. Zechariah 14, here they are, they're all ready to go. And then Christ gives the word that all falls right off of them. Here, Zechariah 14. Let's go back there. We'll see the prophecy of it. Now, how's that for a way to defeat an army? You know, you don't have to fire a shot. You know, don't have to just command right out of his mouth. There it goes. Now, who's gonna have any defense against that? I mean, stop and think of it. How can you possibly defend against your flesh falling off your bones? All right. There we go. Zechariah 14. Okay. Verse 12. And this shall be the plague with which the Lord shall smite all people who have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand on their feet. Their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. And it shall be in that day that a great panic from the Lord shall be among them. I guess so. Now the ones who are not the soldiers fighting, and they shall lay hold each one of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor, and Judah shall also fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the nations and all around shall be gathered, gold, silver, and clothing in abundance. Then it says, likewise shall be the plague of the horse, the mule, the camel, the donkey, and all the beast which shall be in these camps. It shall be as this plague. Then there's going to be a sudden conversion. Verse 16. Oh, I want to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Some won't. Verse 16. And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which come up against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, God's going to have a few friendly persuaders here, as we will see. And it shall be whoever will not come up of all the families of the earth to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. Run out of water, you're in bad shape. And if the family of Egypt that has no rain does not come up to present themselves, This shall be the plague with which the Lord shall strike the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be Egypt's punishment and the punishment of all the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, let's come back and finish up 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter here. The rabbi that interprets the thing for Glenn Beck is a pretty good rabbi. He has some good common sense, but his allegorical interpretations don't fit. And since he doesn't use the New Testament, he doesn't know how to compare it, you see. All right, let's finish up here. That whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and will destroy with the brightness of his coming, even the one whose coming is according to the inner workings of Satan, possessed of Satan the devil, with all power and signs and lying wonders. So if you think the world is deceived today, hold on. It's going to get worse. And with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in those who are perishing, because they did not receive the love of the truth so that they might be saved. Now, what happens when you don't love the truth? Now, we need to think about this today, because there are always trials going on in the churches of God somewhere where someone is leaving the truth, becoming slack in it, giving up on it, and you hear horror stories about people who've given up the Sabbath and given up the holy days and have gone back to Christmas and Easter and New Year's and all of that. Well, they, you know, you have to ask the question, how converted really were they in the first place? And if they were, they're in bad shape because they rejected the truth, because they didn't love the truth. So you have to love the truth and hold to the truth and stick to the truth in all circumstances, regardless of what happens, see? Because if you don't, notice verse 11. For this cause, God will send upon them a powerful deception that will cause them to believe the lie. Do you don't believe the truth? You want to reject it? Stick around. It's going to get worse. Verse 12. So that all may be judged who did not believe the truth, but who took pleasure in unrighteousness. Now we see a little bit of this today in all of these things that we see in the far left. And I think that Glenn Beck has done a marvelous job in exposing spooky-doo George Soros. Someone even sent me an email and said, do you think that George Soros is the Antichrist? I said, no, he's not that inspiring. I said, but he may be an Antichrist with what he is doing by his actions, see? But why is he there? Why is he there? Because Americans have turned their backs on God. You go back and read what happened with Solomon when he started making offerings and sacrifices to other gods, and he knew better because God appeared to him twice. He built the temple of God. What did God do? God raised up Hadad, the Syrian, against him. And so they had terrorist incursions during Solomon's kingdom. Well, you see, you can fight terrorists all you want, but unless you know that they are sent as punishment from God, all your protections, everything that you do sooner or later is going to be breached because you haven't repented and haven't come back to God. That's the whole thing. You can't come back half-hearted to God. Oh, God, I love you, but let me keep this. Oh, God, I'll do what you say, I'll accept this. See? Let's get all religions together and all the religions will be wonderful and good and nice and we'll save ourselves. Won't happen because you don't love the truth. Because all the religions are filled with lies and errors. You need to stick with the Bible and what the truth is here. See? Now, it may help to a certain extent. You may put it off for a while. You know? Just like people have said. Well, we haven't had, now they're touting George Bush. Well, under George Bush, we didn't have another attack. After that, we had a couple. Well, sooner or later, see, they'll figure out a way. The way you stop the enemy is you turn to God. Can God take care of the enemy? Yes, he can. Can he stop them? Yes, he can. He raised them up so he can put them down, can he not? Yes, indeed. So that's really the interpretation that should be. We'll finish up with verse 12 here. So that all may be judged who did not believe the truth, but who took pleasure in unrighteousness. So that's the true interpretation of Genesis 10, 11, and the other scriptures that we added to it.